Hello and welcome to the Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast in the Inner Sanctum. This is where we talk about whatever we want to talk about or whatever I want to talk about. So it's a sort of whatever. And we have the poem of the week, which is obviously poetry. We have the revisiting old favourites, in which I read and up to a point discuss old works of prose that I'd love to revisit with you. At the moment, of course, and for a long time now, we've been doing The Path to Rome, which we're almost finished. I already have in mind what we'll be doing next. But in the Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast, we talk about whatever seems interesting. So that being so, last week we began our discussion of the mystery surrounding the authorship of the play Sir Thomas More, which is normally ascribed to several authors, several contemporaries of Shakespeare. And one of the authors that is everybody agrees on was involved in the writing of the play was William Shakespeare himself. The extent of the mystery is, to what extent was Shakespeare involved? And of course, it's a very interesting question because of the fact that any relationship between Shakespeare and Thomas More is worth exploring. And last week when we began this, we talked about a quick summary of Shakespeare's Catholicism, the evidence for Shakespeare's Catholicism, which you can explore further elsewhere, and the position of St. Thomas More, or just Sir Thomas More as he was then, in the reign of Queen Elizabeth, in other words, during Shakespeare's time. And then the various facts surrounding the mystery of the play and its authorship. The fact that Sir Edmund Tilney, the state censor, was also involved, his handwriting is also on the manuscript. And how it would have been absolutely unthinkable for a play on the theme, a positive play on Sir Thomas More, one which treated him sympathetically, that's such a play to be published or performed in the reign of Queen Elizabeth, at least publicly, would have been unthinkable. So it could not have been submitted to Sir Edmund Tilney, although he was the censor during the final years of Elizabeth's reign. It would not have been, it's not feasible that it was submitted to him for censorship during the reign of Elizabeth, which means that it had to have been submitted during the reign of James I, Elizabeth's successor. And we also worked out that there was only a short honeymoon period of 16 months from 1603, spring of 1603 to the summer of 1604, when religious liberty was restored, albeit very temporarily. And then after that, James I proved himself as tyrannical as Elizabeth I in his persecution of the church. And once again, after the summer of 1604, it would again be unthinkable that the play would be either published or performed publicly, which means that the only reasonable thing to presume is that the play was presented during this honeymoon period between March 1603 and July 1604. This must have been when the manuscript was first submitted, where Sir Edmund Tilney gave his responses, and then the various revisions of the manuscript in the various handwriting that's on it. So that the main text is in the handwriting of Anthony Munday. And, so most people presume that he's the primary author and that the other playwrights sort of just helped, gave a relatively minor helping hand. So what I would like to do here is to look at the evidence which suggests that Anthony Munday could not feasibly have been the main author of a positive, sympathetic portrayal of a Catholic saint like St. Thomas More. So here's the evidence. I'm actually going to read here some chunks from my introduction to the play. I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not, but I was asked, commissioned to write the introduction to the first Spanish edition, first Spanish translation of the play a few years back, which I did. And this was, I think, subsequently published in Latin Mass magazine, where you can find this in English. I don't know, I don't I don't think it's online. I think you have to get the physical magazine. Well, what do I know? By all means, take a look. But I'm going to be reading chunks from it. So here's the evidence why I believe it's not feasible to see Anthony Munday as the primary author of the manuscript. He's the transcriber of it, certainly, but not the author, I'm arguing. So, another question raised by the play's overt sympathy for Catholic martyrs is why Munday, who had been active in the anti-Catholic spy network and was directly or indirectly responsible for sending Catholic priests to their death, should have written so sympathetically of his erstwhile enemies. In 1578, when still a teenager, he had been sent abroad to spy on the activities of English Catholic refugees. Feigning a desire to become a priest, he had gained admittance to the English College in Rome, where he gathered material for his exposé of the college and its activities, which was published in 1582 as The English Romaine Life. In the previous year, he had been involved in the betrayal and capture of St. Edmund Campion. It is therefore a little puzzling that Munday, many years later, should choose Thomas More as his subject, and it is tempting to detect something of a change of heart on the playwright's part, akin to that discernible in Marlowe's Dr. Faustus. So to carry on, the Elizabethan scholar Muriel Sinclair Byrne clearly considered him as being almost psychopathic in his hatred of Catholicism. Quote, quoting from Muriel Sinclair Byrne, Munday liked seeing Jesuits hanged and then drawn and quartered. And Munday liked such a sight not because it was the heyday of the Renaissance and passions ran high, not because he lived in the spacious times of great Elizabeth, but because he was one of those human beings who find a ghastly and secret pleasure in seeing other people hurt. So I find it difficult to believe that Munday, actually, this man was a convert to the faith, having seen the error of his darkness. And I think the answer to the riddle as to whether or not he was genuine in his change of heart can be found in his notorious opportunism, which had been satirised by the poet John Davies in 1594. Munday, I swear, shall be a holiday if he forswear himself but once a day. In the modern idiom, Davies's epigram is saying that it will be a month of Sundays before Munday can go a day without lying or perjuring himself. Could such a man have written so eloquently about two Catholics, Thomas More and John Fisher, who would prefer to be put to death rather than forswear themselves? And then David Wormersley, another scholar, gives his own view on the disingenuity of Munday's religious posturing. And this is a quote from David Wormersley. Was it the case that when in Rome he played the part of a Catholic? Or was it rather that when he returned to England he played the part of a Protestant? Or do we not have to choose between these alternatives? Was religious affiliation for Munday in fact just another expression of the extemporising theatrical talent he had displayed as a boy? Was he therefore always acting, always simply trying on different religious identities for size, and like a religious chameleon, hoping to blend in to the background? Certainly it's hard to pick out any thread of consistency running through Munday's religious activities and associations. This sometime scholar of the English College in Rome, on his return to London, became a friend of the ferocious Protestant and Marian exile Robert Crowley. Later still, he befriended and worked with the crypto-Catholic antiquarian and historian John Stowe. By all accounts, an officious and even overly energetic hunter out of recusants, Munday was just as happy, a few years later, to be equally busy, although less successful, in attempting to suppress the anti-Episcopal writings of Martin Marprelate. So basically, he seems to play both sides of the coin, is what David Wormsley is saying there. A pamphlet published in 1589 imagines John Whitgift, the Archbishop of Canterbury, condemning Monday for betraying the Anglican Church. Quote, "Ah, thou Judas, thou that has already betrayed the papists, I think meanest to betray us also." End quote. In short, and in sum, Monday was trusted by nobody and was considered to be a Judas by everybody. Why, one wonders, should the other collaborators, especially the pro-Catholic Shakespeare, have sought or tolerated Monday's involvement in the writing of the play, or in the efforts to get it published and performed? None of them would have been naive enough to trust him or to feel that his conversion to the cause of Moore and Fisher was genuine. Perhaps he was chosen to transcribe the play precisely because of his anti-Catholic track record and because he was known by Tilney to have always served the interests of the state against its non-conformist dissidents, both Catholic and Puritan. Monday might have been selected as the non-partisan frontman in the efforts of Shakespeare et al. To navigate Sir Thomas More through the perilous waters of state censorship. And the final thing we'll say about him is Monday in his old age, so long after Shakespeare's dead long after the efforts to get this play published had failed. The poet John Taylor, writing in 1638, 5 years after Monday's death, suggests that Monday paid a high psychological price for his involvement in hounding Catholic priests to their death. Taylor reported that, in old age, Monday would run from the table at the sight of a four-quarter of lamb roasted, which John Jarrett concludes was, quote, a neurotic aversion that might relate to his early involvement in the reduction of human beings to butchered carcasses. Jarrett, a firm believer that Monday was the principal author of the play, conjectures that part of the genesis of Sir Thomas More lay in its vacillating main author's need for atonement. So that's Jarrett's opinion, it isn't mine. So just to continue, well, yeah, let's have a reprise here for a moment. So, if the play was being presented to the state censors and Edmund Tilney, the only time it realistically could be between March of 1603 and would it be August of 1604, then it's clear to me that basically when Elizabeth the First died and James the First was good to his promises of restoring religious liberty, everybody was astonished how many Catholics were still in England. At that time, it might well have seemed, certainly the Catholics were rejoicing at the return of their religious liberty, and it might have seemed as if King James, who was known to be sympathetic towards Catholicism, though was not a Catholic himself, his wife certainly was either Catholic or very Catholic, sympathetic to Catholics, that the Catholic Church was going to be restored as the established church in England. Under the aegis protection of the king. Now, if that's the case, we can very much see how an opportunist like Anthony Mundy would want to be involved in something which showed him to be sorry for his past and to be happy with the changes and the restoration of Catholicism to England. And knowing that, we can see how Cat Shakespeare and the other playwrights were happy to play along and have Anthony Mundy as the front man, as we said, because he's safe. He's not going to be accused of being a Catholic. It would just show that now being open, honest, sympathetic about the past, particularly about the Tudor past, remembering that James I was the first Stuart king and his own mother, Mary Stuart, Queen of Scots, had been beheaded, executed on the orders of the last Tudor monarch, Elizabeth I, who was the daughter of the man who had had St. Thomas More's head cut off. That it was entirely likely, or must have seemed so in 1603, St. Thomas More was now being brought in for the cold and would be seen as the hero that he indubitably was. And this would be accepted and become mainstream, and Anthony Mundy would like to be seen as part of that, and the other poets would like to be seen to be part of a broad spectrum here, from the Catholics and pro-Catholics through to those who have been anti-Catholic in the past and those who have been sitting on the fence. So the various playwrights would be that full spectrum, and this was the way they hoped of getting it past those watchful dragons, as C.S. Lewis and Tolkien would say, James's censor, said Edmund Tilney. All right, so the mystery will continue. We'll begin next week, as we continue with the mystery of the play Sir Thomas More, with the evidence for Shakespeare's authorship, because I maintain that Shakespeare was probably the principal author, and I give the evidence for it. So to find out more, please do tune in again next week for next week's Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast on the mystery surrounding the play Sir Thomas More. Until then, thanks so much for joining me. Goodbye and God bless.